Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to Wake Up to Purpose with your host, John Stanko. This program will help you find your purpose and, more importantly, how to make your purpose work for you. And now, here's John Stanko.
Well, hello out there in Internet Radio Land. This is John Stanko coming to you once again, ending our first week of the revival, the renewal of Internet Radio, at least for me. This time we are calling the show Wake Up to Purpose, used to be Your Purpose Quest. But I truthfully had the intro and the outtake from an AM radio show that I was doing, and I wanted to get this up as quickly as I could last weekend. So a friend pulled the clips off for me, and we stuck them on either end, so to speak, and you just heard the opening. And when we finish out today, you'll hear the closing, but it's all about purpose and creativity. And of course, since I was doing the show last, I have started a publishing company, Urban Press, and this week, not exclusively, but we've had a few of the authors on, and today, I can't think of anybody I'd rather have on or anything I'd rather to hear them talking about than Dr. Howard Slaughter talking to us about some very basic and sound financial concepts. And the reason I hesitated there is that I want to make sure, and I'm going to bring him on in a minute, that we talk about what we almost called the book, because I posted something on Facebook this morning that if we were as believers were following or counting on this economy, we'd be in trouble. But we have a transcendent economy, I said, where God's rules reign. And so we are going to touch on a lot of practical cultural wisdom that, of course, is steeped in biblical concepts, because that's who Dr. Howard is. But then we're going to talk a little bit about a transcendent economy, too. Many of us have been investing in that transcendent economy for a long time, and that's why we're putting our trust in the Lord. I haven't received a lot of updates from around the world. I know I did hear from my driver in Kenya that I think the cases in Kenya are up to 122 so far, with 1,500 people being quarantined. That's really good. Things have been increasing very slowly there, and so while it is great inconvenience for people to have to shelter in place, some of their places aren't very good to shelter in, and the culture is based on being out every day. Even in some of the rural areas, 10 years ago, you couldn't find a scooter or a motorcycle. Now it seems everybody has one, and that's their principal means of transportation. Well, if you know anything about a motorcycle, you know you're not going to maintain the 1.5 meters, as they're asking over there, or the 6 feet of distance, social distance here. So it's a big adjustment. And I, when we talk about a transcendent economy, yesterday I send money over to our partners every month, and there are two particular projects I want to make sure I'm trusting the Lord to keep them all going, but two in particular. One are the teacher salaries at the Dr. Stanko Academy, and the second one is the sanitary supply distribution every month to the young ladies, and there are about 600 of them that we've asked to go through training and register, and then because they did, they come and pick up their supplies every month. So that comes to $1,325, not a huge amount of money, but I put this up on Facebook just about 36 hours ago, and about half of the money has come in for April. And so I've urged people who are on Facebook with me to give what they can, but I know there are many needs out there, so there's no high pressure, no reading of Bible verses and making promises of what will happen. But people who have been there and people who know me and who follow followed me are very generously giving, and gosh, I'm very grateful to the Lord and to those who are giving. But again, that's something we may get into now as we go through. So before I bring Dr. Slaughter on, and I want to keep with my tradition that I have established over the last couple of weeks. Anytime I do any media, Facebook Live or interviews or now blog radio for the last week, I start off by reading Psalm 91. Psalm 91 is the refuge psalm, a God is my fortress psalm. And I regularly tell the story while I have read this over the years, but one year, one particular occasion when I was in Afghanistan, it was very tense there. I was teaching a guest instructor at Kabul University, and I was with a team there who were doing other work from the Philippines and Korea, and we all lived together in two really big houses. And so every morning, because things were tense there, we got up at 7 o'clock, we had a time of prayer, and then at some point, we all had, and they asked us to bring the same version of the Bible with us, and so we would read out loud Psalm 91, and I'll never forget how it grounded us. I'll never forget how what peace it brought. And if you're not familiar with it, I'm going to read it here in a minute, and you'll understand why. If you are familiar with it, then of course you already know why. Now, I'm using a different version every day, and all month I still haven't used up all the versions that I can find. And so I like to use the different versions. Sometimes there's a different word, a different phrasing that really strikes a listener or a reader. And so I want to continue to do that till I run out. And then we'll start recycling translations. But today is the Darby translation. I've never used this in my writing or my preaching. It's very King James-ish, as you will hear. I didn't take the time to do any research on it. But let's go ahead and just dive in, and we'll read Psalm 91, then we're going to bring Dr. Slaughter in. But the Darby translation says, "He that dwelleth in the secret place of the Most High shall abide under the shadow of the Almighty. I say of Jehovah, my refuge and my fortress, my God, I will confide in him. Surely he shall deliver thee from the snare of the fowler and from the destructive pestilence. He shall cover thee with his feathers, and under his wings shalt thou find refuge. His truth is a shield and buckler. Thou shalt not be afraid for the terror by night, for the arrow that flieth by day, for the pestilence that walketh in darkness, for the destruction that wasteth at noonday. 1,000 shall fall at thy side, and 10,000 at thy right hand, but it shall not come nigh thee. Only with thine eyes shalt thou behold and see the reward of the wicked. Because thou hast made Jehovah my refuge, the Most High, thy dwelling place, there shall no evil befall thee, neither shall any plague come nigh thy tent. For he shall give his angels charge concerning thee to keep thee in all thy ways. They shall bear thee up in their hands, lest thou dash thy foot against a stone. Thou shalt tread upon the lion and the adder, the young lion and the dragon shalt thou trample under foot. Because he hath set his love upon me, therefore will I deliver him. I will set him on high, because he hath known my name. He shall call upon me, and I will answer him. I will be with him in trouble. I will deliver him and honor him. With length of days will I satisfy him and shew him my salvation." Psalm 91. And this is not a justification to run out and do crazy things. In fact, the devil tempted Jesus with a misquotation of this psalm, taking Jesus to the top of the temple, said, "Hey, you know, if you're the man, if you're the Messiah man, throw yourself off, because you know what the Bible says, God will protect you." And Jesus saw right through it and said, "You shall not test the Lord your God." So we don't stand on Psalm 91 to test the Lord and say, "Hey, I'm bad, you know, and watch what God does for me." But as Martin Luther said, and I'm summarizing, he said, "I take precautions in this time of plague, but if somebody needs me, I am there." And I think that that's a good philosophy. And so without further ado, you've heard enough from me. I want to bring on our guest today, Dr. Howard Slaughter. Dr. Howard, welcome to Wake Up to Purpose.
Thank you very much, John. It's a pleasure to be on with you today.
Yes, it brings back good memories when we were working on the book, and how often we would meet at Panera's and sit, and often we got a little distracted because we got this we'd get to talking about something and maybe something in the Bible or something else, and we would talk and learn. But the best thing was to be sitting with you and just to be drinking in of your financial wisdom. So thank you for being here with us today.
Thank you so much, Zona. We did have wonderful times discussing, talking. It was very cathartic as well to just have an opportunity to reflect and think about this whole topic, because today, like never before, I think people are speaking about and talking about this whole issue of debt and where are we in America and in our individual homes, and what do we do to get out of it? As we all know, with COVID-19 right now, it's caused a lot of problems. People, unfortunately, have been losing jobs or have been working with reduced hours. There are a lot of challenges that people face today with respect to this whole issue. One of the key factors that we often forget about is just some basic principles. And I just want to start, because you read a great scripture. One of my favorite scriptures also is in Galatians, and it's Galatians 6 and 7. I like 6 and 9 as well. But it says, "Be not deceived. God is not mocked. For whatsoever a man soweth, that shall he also reap." Now, we often hear people talk about that scripture in the context of, if you do something bad, you'll get it coming back to you. But I want to just share with the listeners today, that is also relative to how you give financially and of your time and of your substance.
Amen.
Because if we understand the principles of sowing, if we understand the importance of sowing, we will reap. And one of the key factors that I talk to a lot of people about finances, and they give me all these different scenarios, they can give me algorithms about how they do what they do, but when we begin to talk about what you're sowing like, we begin to find out that they really don't sow, or they sow not liberally, but very, very carefully, meaning that they don't do a lot of sowing. And so if you want to receive God's blessing, you have to be a sower. You have to sow. You get nothing if you plant nothing. If you want to harvest, you've got to plant. And so the one principle I hope people who are listening today remember is the principle of sowing. Do that first. You have to sow, then you reap. And here's why it's so important. It's because of times like this, John, as you know, who would have ever thought this was going to happen? I think most of us, when we came through 9/11, we probably thought that was one of the worst scenarios, and it was bad. But this has never happened before. And so today is not the time to begin to sow. I mean, if you haven't been sowing, that's certainly okay. But you would have hoped that those who know the Lord have been sowing all along, so that in times like this, you can reap the harvest. So I just want to start off by saying that's so important about everything we talk about when it comes to finances, debt, and my book, Addicted to Debt, Get Out and Stay Out, which is a great read, if I have to say so myself. And I've gotten a lot of people who've given us some good input on that. But it really is true, John, and as you know, this is where we need to be today. Not addicted to
that. Yeah, and I think that's what I appreciated most about your presentation. It you know, because some of them are, you know, again, so we can build our nest egg, or, you know, so we can have our vacation home. And there's nothing wrong with any of those. But your perspective really was first and foremost to be able to invest and sow into spiritual things, into the kingdom of God. And people who even wanted to give but who were bound up by debt weren't in the position to do so, and you, your heart was to get them to the place where they could be able to do that, because I think you know Well, I think I know you know the joys of giving, and you understand this principle through and through. Do you remember? And I'm sure you do. We toyed with calling the book something else. Do you remember what that was in our discussion?
I certainly do. I think we had a couple of ideas. One was debt free, then set free.
Mm-hmm.
That was one. And there were several others. Which one were you thinking of, John?
I'm thinking of the one where you said, give your way out. We were talking about this importance of sowing and being radical in investing in what I referred to earlier as the transcendent economy.
Yeah, that was a really good discussion because, again, it goes to my premise of
mm-hmm.
of giving, and it's still true, and we talked about that in the book,
mm-hmm.
but it was really important to emphasize giving because a lot of people have asked me, what do I do to get out of this debt problem? How
mm-hmm.
do I change the trajectory of my life as it relates to debt? Am I ever
mm-hmm.
going to get to a point where I don't have an excessive bills?
Mm-hmm.
Is it really possible, John? Here's one that people really don't believe. Is it possible to even live debt free?
Right.
I mean, we have people mm-hmm. who don't even believe, and there are statistics, and we have them, that many people believe they'll never be debt free. In fact, they think
mm-hmm.
they're going to die owing money. So just think
mm-hmm.
about that. Think about the fact that your mentality is you will never be able to get out of debt.
Mm-hmm.
And if you live like that, that's going to be a stressful situation for that particular individual or individuals.
Yeah.
So yeah, giving is the key. And the other thing we talked about, too, it's not just giving of your resources.
Mm-hmm.
There are so many people who are talented that have skills and are able to do so many things to help people.
Mm-hmm.
And they are reluctant, in some cases, not all, to utilize those talents as well. And we want
mm-hmm.
people to understand that giving is a broad category. Giving
mm-hmm.
has to do with communication. It has to do with physically helping people. It has to do with, obviously, giving of your resources, your talent, your time. There are so many ways to give. So when people say, and I've heard people say, well, I don't have much to give. Really?
Mm-hmm.
Let's think about that. What has God given you that somebody else next to you may not have? Is that something you can give? So we
mm-hmm.
want this broad perspective of how it is we do give and then how it is we get to the point where we begin to reap what we have sown. And the other
mm-hmm.
point that I wanted to emphasize, John, is a lot of people assume that if you give money, that's what you're going to reap.
Mm.
That's not necessarily the case. Or if you don't give money, you're not going to reap that back. In many cases, it's not if I give $10, I'm going to get back $20.
Mm-hmm.
There are ways in which God can bless us that we have no idea of how he's going to do it. And just thinking about today, just the fact that the Lord is blessed, there are some people who still have their jobs, who are still working.
Mm-hmm.
And there may be somebody who is not working but may be able to, for a period of time, to do a little better given all the things that are happening because there's more money supposedly for those who are furloughed
mm-hmm.
or laid off. Whatever the situation
mm-hmm.
is, God is in control, and he is the one who will keep us, guide us, lead us, and bless us. And so we can't
mm-hmm.
time this. We just have to do what he says to do. One of the other things on it I was thinking about and I was looking at, because I get a lot of questions around the disparity in wealth between races. And I
mm-hmm.
put a lot of that in my book. And
right.
why is it that people there, you know, one of the studies talked about the majority of Americans say that people who are rich because they've had advantages in life.
Mm-hmm.
And others say that people who are poor is because they've had fewer advantages in their life. And some of the statistics say, you know, why a person is rich, 65% say they've had more advantages in life, and that's why they're rich. 33% said that they have worked harder than most other people. So interestingly enough, the dichotomy there is only about a third of people believe that that is the case based on work ethic. 65%, a little more than two-thirds, believe that it's because of other things. And then we ask the same question about why a person is poor. Some say they've faced more obstacles, challenges in their life, and that's about 71% believe that. 26% say that they've worked hard and done the best they can, in essence. So you've got these disparities in terms of why a person is rich, why a person is poor. But here's the point that I'd like to make, and there may be other perspectives as well, but this is what some of the research says. The key is it matters not if you're rich or poor from the perspective of if you are doing what God tells you to do, He is the one that can keep you and bless you. And it's not all about money. Health is really important today.
Yeah.
I mean, we know that now more than anything else. Money
Indeed.
Cannot buy health. And unfortunately, there are a number of people who are dying right now with this virus that money heretofore hasn't even been able to deal with because we don't have a quote-unquote vaccine yet for this virus. So it's not just tied to money. It's all these other things that God can bless us and keep us in the midst of the storm. And that's what's important. We want to be healthy, and certainly we want to be able to say that the Lord has blessed us. And these are the things that we know are certainly some of the benefits of giving and living the way God wants us to.
Yeah, indeed. If you're just tuning in, we're talking to Dr. Howard Slaughter, the author of Addicted to Debt, Get Out and Stay Out, on the introduction to this show on the website for Blog Talk Radio. You can click on the link that's the pink Addicted to Debt, and it'll take you right to Amazon so you can get your own copy. Dr. Slaughter, one of the things, you know, I've known a lot of people, and I'm not detracting from them, who have made the study of finances, biblical finances, their life's work, and they've written books, and they're very good, and they've made important contributions. The thing I appreciate about you is you're not just haven't done a biblical study. Your life has been involved around, for lack of a better term, money, your career. Tell our listeners some of your pedigree, some of where what you've done that I think adds persuasive power, almost moral authority to what it is that you're saying, because this hasn't been a hobby for you. This really has been your purpose. This has been your life's work. Talk to us a little bit about some of the roles that you've had.
Sure, John. Thank you for mentioning that. I've been really, really blessed. And I'll just share a couple of things, but it has been my life's work, and I've enjoyed it, and I've tried to marry what I do for a living along with what I believe, and it's rare that people have that opportunity to do that. But I have been a banker for many years. I was vice president of community development for Dollar Bank. Prior to that, I was a bank manager, assistant vice president at Equibank. We go way back to Equibank. and I did that, a while ago. And
The old timers will remember Equibank. Old timers like us.
Yeah.
Go ahead.
you're right, John. And then when I was recruited to come to Dollar Bank at that time in 1988 or so, there was a lot going on around the Community Reinvestment Act. And they were looking for individuals that can come in and help turn banks around in that area working with the community. And I was recruited by Dollar to come in and lead the efforts for the entire bank on our CRA. And the Lord blessed. I was able to do that and did that for 3 years and helped the bank and led the bank to their first ever outstanding CRA rating from their regulator. And that was a great opportunity. Worked with a lot of organizations and community leaders and spent a lot of time developing products, working on programs for families and individuals throughout the bank. It was a great time. And I left there, and I was recruited to come to Pittsburgh History and Landmarks Foundation as the Director of Preservation Services. In that role, I lent millions of dollars to organizations who were revitalizing neighborhoods throughout the region, and we had a major loan fund, and that was a lot of fun. We did developments in East Liberty when East Liberty was starting to turn around, Garfield, all over this region, and I did that for a good while, so handling more money, working in that area. And then I was recruited from there. And the Lord bless, many of my jobs I was recruited. And same thing that happened at Fannie Mae. I had gone to D.C. with one of my peers, and we went to D.C. and met some folks. Long story short, Fannie Mae decided to open an office here, first office ever, and took them 6 months to find someone. And I didn't know they were interested in me. I was giving them names of people. This is how good God is, John. I had been giving them names of people to hire. Mm-hmm. And after 6 months, they came back and said, look, you're the person we really want in this position. Mm-hmm. True story. Mm-hmm. And I started at Fannie Mae, first ever office here. And that's when we started to get into real big numbers. I had a housing plan goal of $2 billion, and that was a very big deal. At that point, we were doing deals for $50 million, $100 million with all kind of lenders and public officials. I spent a lot of time in Washington, D.C. At that time, Howard Hanna, who most people know here, was the chair of my board, and we spent a lot of time with senators and congressmen in Washington, D.C., talking about development, working with our mayor here, county executives, the whole nine yards. And Lord bless, at that time, I was able to help in my team over 24,000 families in becoming homeowners in southwest Pennsylvania, which was my market. And I did that for 7 years. And interestingly enough, Fannie Mae had to close its offices given some governmental regulations. And I lost my job. But God is so good. Obviously, we got a parachute when we left. And before I left, I was offered another job. And I helped write the proposal for the job, and I ended up becoming the president of Landmarks Community Capital Corporation. So left one job, Lord opened up another door. I walked in, I was president of that organization. And again, my first big deal with that organization was with an opportunity with PNC Bank, and that was a $5 million development we did in Homewood and working in urban communities. And that was really great. I did that for several years. And then I left, started my own company because I had a lot of opportunities and I wanted to do something. And so I started a company called Christian Management Enterprises. It's a limited liability corporation, which I am still the president of. I just don't do any work in the company now that I have another job. But I started that. And did that for almost 7 years. And at that time, I was doing consulting work for major corporations. I can't really name them because I had to sign a non-disclosure agreement. And I had a number of clients who I worked with that were doing grocery store deals, training, all of those kind of things, working with financial institutions, community-based organizations. And I did that for 6-7 years or so, and then the Lord opened up a door for me to come to Habitat for Humanity of Greater Pittsburgh, where I currently work. I'm the president there, and we do a lot of development. We do housing. We're also a mortgage banker because we make mortgages for families that we work with in our programs. I also have a retail store where we sell items to consumers, which is in Swissville. So we do mortgages, we build homes, and we have a retail store. So it's been really interesting. And then I would say throughout those times, the Lord blessed, I had an opportunity to do a fellowship at different places. And I also spent time in a program at the Harvard University and John F. Kennedy School. That was a program for senior executives in state and local government. I did some real estate courses at MIT. The Lord blessed, I have 5 earned degrees. So that was really an achievement. One of the things that I always tease people about when you go to these conferences, they ask you, tell us something unique about yourself. Well, here's a unique thing, John. I have 5 earned degrees. And I never spent one day in a college dorm room.
Right, right. You never ate college food.
Yeah, because when I came, I'm also a veteran as well. I'm very happy, thankful to say that I served my country both in the Navy and in the Army Reserves. So I used the GI Bill and started going to school. And so I did all my schooling after I got out of the military. So I did that. Then I had a chance to go back to Harvard, and I participated in the Governing for Nonprofit Excellence program. I have a lot of awards and accolades from all around. I did a lot of work with the Obama administration, and prior to that, the Bush administration. I've been to the White House. I've met President Obama. I've been with President George Bush, and I've worked with a lot of people. And I've been really, really blessed to do a lot of things in the financial world. And in church, I've been CFO of major churches, and have helped a lot of churches, not just in Pittsburgh, but around the country. And so I've been blessed. I've been consultants for churches out of state. I've worked with bishops. It's just been a wonderful, wonderful opportunity. And I thank God for giving me those opportunities. Just want to help and make a difference.
Yeah, and this week I've been talking, I wrote something that said, I put a formula for wisdom. It's wisdom is knowledge plus experience plus anointing, you know, plus the presence of the Lord. And when you have all those things and you mix them together in the right proportions, you have wisdom. And what's needed now for some people individually as they face their own situations, and now what we're going to face on a worldwide scale where national economies are concerned, we're going to need a lot of wisdom of people like you. And that's why I think, you know, it's I wanted the listeners to know, and I just want to be declaring into the atmosphere, you know, to principalities and powers. I said that I wrote this morning that in tough times, troubled times, God's people always rise to the top. And it's not the time that they hide, it's the time that they step forward. So I would look to see that you're old enough that you got lots of experience, but you're young enough that you still have a lot to offer. If you're just tuning in, we're talking to Dr. Howard Slaughter, author of Addicted to Debt, Get Out and Stay Out. And I want to get into that concept. We're about at the halfway point. Talk to us, you know, about what you share in the book. You were very helpful in focusing my understanding both on debt picture and especially on mortgage. And maybe let's start with the mortgage, your own personal philosophy there. Then I'm sure we'll have enough to talk about there, and then we'll go on to the debt and we'll wrap up for the day. But talk to us about housing and mortgages and what have you.
Sure, John. That's a very, very good subject to speak about, and one that is really important. Let me just start with this with regard to mortgages. The number one way the average American gains his or her wealth is through the equity in their home. And let me just segue for a second, and I just thank God. The Lord bless. Just yesterday, my son purchased his first condo. And, here's the thing, the Lord bless, credit was great, he had all the things in place, and there was no problem with getting his loan underwritten. And so one of the key factors is we advocate strongly for people to understand the importance of owning a home, because if you continue to pay rent, you have no equity. You have nothing to use as collateral. There is no generational wealth opportunity there. And unfortunately, just speaking about African Americans, less than 50% of African Americans own homes. And so when we talk about wealth accumulation, in many cases, it begins there. So from the beginning, I want to make sure people understand how important it is to own a home. You want to purchase appreciating assets. Most people probably have a car or will have a car. And in some cases, it's absolutely necessary. No problem with that. But it's not an appreciating asset, although in many cases we need it. Okay. But don't forget about something that you have value, that increases in value. So that's the first thing. We want to get people to understand you need that. Don't continue to pay. And I have friends who own properties, and they've rented to people for many, many years, which is certainly fine from their perspective. But for those with whom they're renting, if they don't change that pattern, they're going to find out that it's going to be very difficult to maneuver in life without some kind of asset. So we're advocating people buy a home. It doesn't have to be a Taj Mahal. As long as it's yours and you're building equity in it, that's what matters. That's the first thing. The second thing is when you begin to figure out you want to buy a home, there are a couple of things you have to look for. Number one, there's a thing that most people don't know about, or many people don't know about, I'll say that. It's called private mortgage insurance. When you buy a home, if you don't have at least 20% down, the banks want to make sure that there's some kind of protection. So they require you to pay an additional amount of money every month that goes towards PMI. And the point here is, John, and to the listeners, one does not have to have PMI in their mortgage payment if they have a sufficient amount down. So what am I saying? I'm saying that it's important to save money so that when you buy your house, you can put down 15%, 20%, 20% preferably, so you don't have to pay PMI. And the other piece of that is by putting 20% down, you've already instantly gain 20% equity, right? So there are some people and there are some programs which there's nothing wrong with that, but it provides you a home with only 2%, 5% down, sometimes 0% down. Well, that might be what you have to do, but if you purchase a home with no money down, you have no equity day one, and it's going to take longer to build up that equity. But I'd still rather you do that than not have a home. But if you can save some of the money so that you don't have that PMI, that's going to be a very important thing. So that's the next thing I want to mention. And then thirdly, and I'm not saying these are in order, but you want to make sure you have great credit. Because today, when I was a lender at the bank and we made loans, we pulled a credit report, and we made our own assessment based on what we knew the bank would accept or not accept. But there were no credit scores at that time. I mean, credit scores have only been around less than 15 years. And so today you get a credit score, and credit scores can dictate what interest rate you pay. Higher the credit score, the lower the interest rate. Lower the credit score, the higher the interest rate. And many people don't catch this, and this was funny because it just happened yesterday when my son was closing on his mortgage and I was there. They gave him the amortization schedule, which he knew about, but it lists every payment for the next 30 years, and it shows how much interest you're going to pay over time. And a lot of people don't look at the amortization schedule. It's really important so that you don't have to take out a 30-year mortgage and pay it over 30 years. You want to pay these things off as quickly as possible. And so we advocate being debt free, getting that mortgage paid off, getting the cars paid off, all of those things, because in times like today, you're going to feel much different with no debt than you would if you had a lot of debt. So the mortgage is really important, and it is also generally the largest asset that the average family has. For the most part, a home is that largest asset. And so it's important to maintain the property and maintain it well. But most importantly, don't spend your money for 15, 20 years in rent when you could own. And it is possible to own. Some people don't believe they can own, but you can own. The times that we are in today has been very favorable for people who want to become homeowners. And the funny thing, John, you know this, 10, 15 years goes by really quick. You don't think about
faster all the time.
It's just, what happened in the last 10 years? So you find that people are renting for 10 and 15 years. Well, that's a very tough situation, and your rent's going to continually go up, and you have no asset. So home ownership is one of the most important things from a financial perspective that I believe is important to talk about.
Yeah, and you give us, in the book, you give a good strategy. You really help me understand this, the importance of it, the priority of it, and we embrace that, and God has blessed us and helped us in that. And so that is... in the book, and I appreciate it. You differentiate home ownership as you just did from everything else. But then we've got the other side, the other issue of debt, and even there, you in the book lay out some really good things, helpful for me. I know they'll be helpful for the readers. Just give us some of the highlights of your. You've already alluded to some of the issues about debt, but just talk to our folks of why it is so detrimental, what it costs, but there is hope, and how they can get out and stay out.
Sure, John. Let me just talk about real quick another subject that many people are familiar with, and this is credit cards. And I want to emphasize, because I've been speaking about this at various churches and universities over the last year, and it was interesting that when I asked certain people, do you understand the difference between a credit card and a charge card, there were a number of people that didn't realize there was a difference, first of all. Right? They looked at the card and said, well, I guess it's a credit card. And so what we advocate in the book is that, and we know there are times when people may need credit cards. So instead of going with a credit card, we advocate going with a charge card. Now, let me just give a quick differentiation. A credit card is an extension of credit. You have a $1,000 credit limit. You put $500 down by purchasing something, and now you have X amount of months to pay off the $500, provided you don't borrow anything else on a credit card. One of the most important factors that keeps people in debt is this: paying the minimum payment. All too often, people pay the minimum payment. They want the payment to be low so that it doesn't seem like it's too difficult for you to pay, but the real issue is that it will take you longer to pay it off. And because it takes you longer, you're paying more interest, and it's almost a vicious cycle. So don't use credit cards is our position. Our position is to use charge cards. Charge cards typically require you to pay that balance off every month because it is not an extension of credit. And so you charge it, you pay it off within 30 days or sooner, and there is no interest and there is no extension of credit. So it forces you to pay that off every month, and that helps to keep you in a better financial position. But today, the average American has used credit cards continually. Many families have 4 and 5 credit cards per household. And here's the interesting thing, John. If you ask somebody 6 months from now, what did they spend that $3,000 on a credit card for, in many cases, they can't even tell you. And if they do tell you, often it's things like clothing, trips, things of that nature, which nothing's wrong with that. But if you have to put it on a credit card, that might not be the best way to utilize that card and to spend your money. So what we say is charge cards will help you reduce your debt, keep you better aligned with not being overly spending more money than your budget allows you to. And then that takes us right to the whole budgeting aspect. And I won't spend a lot of time on that, but I will say this. Many people, when we say the B word, the budget word, they don't like to hear that. But the reality is it's just like GPS in your car. If you don't know where you're going, you need a GPS to tell you which way to go. And if you're going the wrong way, once you key your coordinates in, it will tell you that as well. That's synonymous with what a budget is. It's a guide. It helps you to figure out the road in which you are going. And without one, you can become in the position where you are aimlessly trying to figure out how to get somewhere but not going anywhere because you don't have a guide. And that's what a budget really is. So we use the word, it's a guide. It's a financial guide. It's not something that's designed to be restrictive such that you can enjoy yourself at times. You can put in your budget a movie. Obviously, we're not going to movies today or restaurants, but those things can be put in the budget. And we tell people, put everything in the budget that you do.
Right.
And I speak about this often as well. My wife and I, years ago, we decided to track everything we spend for a month, and we wanted to continue to spend what we normally spend. After the month, we didn't realize how much money we were spending when she was buying coffee and I was buying a Pepsi and I brought a candy bar and she brought, you know, more coffee or whatever that may be. But when you consider that you're spending $9 to $15 every other day on incidental things, and then you realize how much that adds up to for the month, you're spending a lot of excess money that you may not be realizing. So there are things that you can do to minimize the expenses that you are doing every month that are not necessary. So it requires discipline. It does. It requires information. It does. But these are things that can help you get to a place where you want to be. And there is no substitute, John, for the listeners. There is no substitute for doing these pragmatic things that help you get to where you want to go. If you don't do them, you're not going to get there. And that's why we push it, we advocate it, and we talk about this. And I just spoke at one of the universities here. It doesn't matter if you're in college. It doesn't matter if you are mid-career, a senior. It doesn't matter. This debt issue has a hold on every group of people in America, every group. And that's the other key thing that we want to emphasize. People need to understand it's everywhere. And here's something, John, that most people don't probably think about. Everybody may not be an athlete. Everybody may not be a singer. But everybody has to deal with money. You're not going to pass through this life and not have to deal with money some kind of way. So it behooves all of us to make sure we understand it. The money is the one universal thing that every person, whatever country you are in, whatever status you are in, you have to deal with money. So then why not be good at what you are having to deal with every day? And that's the other key piece. That's why this is a big topic, because everybody has to deal with it. And you can't blame people when you're 50 years old about your plight if you haven't taken any steps to get to where you need to go, if you haven't been disciplined. It's ultimately an individual effort until you're married or whatever and you work with your spouse But by and large, you still have to have those skills and have to be willing to make those sacrifices. And it is sacrificial at times.
Mm-hmm.
But ultimately, it'll be beneficial down the road.
Yeah. Yeah, I've heard your voice in my head. My lease on my car is up this month, and so I'm turning it in, and I'm not getting another one. I mean, we have another
car. I like
car,
that, John.
You know, it's and you know, and I would just been thinking, okay, you know, it's the car payment, and then it's the insurance. And then it's, of course, the gas. And, of course, I'm going less places now. But then I have XM radio, you know, in the car. And
right.
then I have
right.
Internet in the car. And I'm adding this up. And this is a lot of money. And so, you know, and I'm older than you are, you know, but this book and spending time with you really helped me with this personally, helped me with just thinking things through. And, you know, I think I bought into some things, you know, where I had to prove something or, you know, I was exercising faith or whatever the case, you know, whatever my thinking
right.
was, and I won't go into that. But I just have never, and I'm so glad when I think who, like you said, who would have ever thought we'd be a world at war, and that's really
right.
what we are. This is a world war. And
right.
and so I'm just, my wife and I have been thanking God every day. I still got a little ways to go on a few things, but it's we've made tremendous progress. And that was one thing you talked about too, is to gain small victories. You know,
right.
to you know, to you don't look to tackle necessarily the biggest thing at once, but build yourself up to it. All of it was very helpful, and it's all in the book, Addicted to Debt, Get Out and Stay Out. We've got about 6-7 minutes, so what else? What did I miss? What else would you like to share with our listeners that would be helpful at this time or maybe would tantalize them that they can get the rest of the story in the book?
Sure, John. Thank you for asking. I'd like to just take a few seconds to talk about credit scoring and credit report. As you know, in my book, I actually put my credit report. Most
mm-hmm.
people don't do that. You don't see mm-hmm. most people's credit report. I put it in there so that people can see, number one, it is true, you can live debt-free.
Mm-hmm.
Number two, when we talk about credit scoring, it's important for people to understand how to manage their credit and how to deal with the credit bureaus if there are problems with your credit report. Because
mm-hmm.
today, credit reports really came as a result of trying to figure out how to approve loans in a better way, more systematic way. But what's happened, it's morphed into many more things now. So if you want to buy a home, they're going to pull your credit score. If you want to buy a car, they're going to look at your credit score. If you want insurance, they're going to look at your credit score. If you want a job, they're going to look at your credit score. Credit scores wasn't designed for all of that initially, but today it's being used for so many things, it's important
mm-hmm.
for all of us to make sure we stay on top of our credit, because decisions are being made by three little numbers, and that's not your home address. It's your credit score. And so
mm-hmm.
it's imperative that people pay attention to this. And I can tell you, as a former lender, these things are important. We look at them. We help them. We use them to help us make decisions. And I've seen situations where people were turned down because of their credit score. And so credit scores, they fluctuate. It's not an exact science. I mean, we can tell you what the credit score is made up of and all the different factors, but it's really a black box issue. You really don't know specifically how it's going to come out. They give you some indicators, but you have to stay on top of it. And we talk about that in the book. And in fact, John, in the book, because some years ago, 10, 15 years ago, when I had a credit card with Citibank, it was 15, maybe longer than that. And I said, we don't need this card anymore. We don't want it. We hadn't used it. It had zero balance, but we just had it because we never cut it up.
Mm-hmm.
So we decided to do all of that, told them we don't want the card. And because we turned the card in with a zero balance, hadn't used it for years, it reduced our credit score. And I didn't understand why would my credit score go down because we cut up a card that we no longer needed and wanted. And it got to a point where I had to write Fair Isaacs, which is the scoring, the company that put together the algorithm for the credit score. And I wrote the bank as well because I didn't believe that my credit score should be reduced based on that. And I actually have those two letters in the book. So people can see sometimes you have to go all the way to the top to get a resolution to an issue. And I did that, and it got resolved. And I actually have a letter from Citibank and I believe the Credit Bureau in the book. So people can see you have to take steps to get things done, and sometimes it requires more than what you think you would have to do, but in order to deal with these issues, you have to go the next step, and that's what I did. So I wanted to share that with people so they understood if you know that the issue, if you are right, you got to stick with that, and you've got to be able to prove that, though, and that's another key piece that I think is really important for people to see, and it's a serious approach dealing with the issue that many Americans are faced with every day.
Yeah, indeed, and we do appreciate your transparency. You know, you're the quintessential teacher. You know, you're not just putting information out there; you're putting yourself out there. And again, as I said earlier, I think it adds, you know, moral fiber to what it is that you're teaching. You know, the book Addicted to Debt, Get Out and Stay Out. We do talk. You talk about gambling a little bit. You talk about the giving issue that we raised at the very beginning. You also share about your doctoral project where you worked with high school students and showed that just a little bit of training, you know, can go a long, long way toward helping people establish better habits, better behaviors. We talk a little bit about student loans, about predatory lending, so much more than we can cover in this time together. I just wanted to whet everybody's appetite. And I want to thank you for your time. I want to thank you for your role in my own life. And I want to thank you for producing a book that I'm glad you had the foresight to do it because we need it now more than ever. Thank you for your time and joining us today. Any final words?
Yeah, I just wanted to say that I have to thank my wife because for many years, she said, you must write this book, and she kept prodding me to do it, and I started it, and then I stopped, and I just thank God for her who stood beside me and helped push me along. We always need somebody to give us a little boost, no matter who we are,
Indeed.
So I thank God for her, and thank you, John, because it was great working with you going through this whole process, and so somebody already asked me, what's your next book? So we'll talk about that a little later, John.
Oh, I like the sound of that. Well, listen, you stay safe and well, and let's stay in touch. And, of course, I thank you for your some of your support towards some of the causes I'm involved in, and God bless you for that. But God bless you for the seed that you've sown in my life and in other lives. And I know there's an abundant harvest ahead for you. So you take care. God bless you, and thanks again.
Thank you, John. I appreciate it.
All righty. So long for now. All right. So Dr. Howard Slaughter, Addicted to Debt, Get Out and Stay Out. This is it is a command, but it's a loving command because he knows and others of us know the pains of not being there. So, well, that wraps up for today. It's a Friday afternoon as we have done the live recording. I don't know when you're listening, if you didn't listen live, but whenever it is, I hope that you are doing well. Hope you are addressing the issues in your life that we have talked about today. Dr. Slaughter, you just can get in contact with me. The ending is going to tell you how to do that. If you want to get in touch with him, go to Amazon.com, Addicted to Debt, Howard Slaughter, Get Out and Stay Out. Until next time, this is John Stanko saying so long for now. You be about the work of your purpose.
Thanks again for listening to Wake Up to Purpose with John Stanko. To get in touch with John, you can go to www.purposequest.com or write him at johnstanko@gmail.com.